This is Bigger Than the Game with Jeremy Dove and Jose Ruiz.
Welcome to Bigger Than the Game with Jeremy and Jose. I'm Jeremy Dove, and I'm joined by my tag team partner, Mr. Jose Ruiz. What's going on, man?
Jeremy, what's up, man? How's it going, dude?
It's going good, man. It's going good. And this is a fun one. You know, I like it when we get a chance. Some people hate lists and those things like that, and I understand why, but one thing about a good list, or even a bad list, it leads to that debate, that talk. Yeah. And that's, you know, for sports fans, that's what's fun. So this is going to be talking about our top five sporting events we wish we were there for.
Yeah, man.
So this is a big one here. This is a lot to choose from. And Jose, I wanted to ask you, going into when you were making your list, what would you say wound up being like your criteria for like how you like picked out your five?
So I'll say this, Jeremy. I don't know if you did this. I think you did, but I don't know. Because again, if you've listened to this show, and you know when we had episodes when we talk about a list, we don't share our list until you know we're actually recording. So it's always a surprise. You know what I mean? Because that way it's just better conversation. But one thing I eliminated were anything like championship wise Philly sports. Like, you know what I mean? Like I eliminated 08. I eliminated, you know, any of the championships, right? Like, you know, 2017 Eagles. Like I eliminated any of those games, like the Super Bowl, all that stuff. I took that out immediately. Then another one was like a sporting event that it's like it could have been in the past, but if you still have conversations today about it, like it still gives me like chills. You know what I mean? Or if I watch a documentary on it, still gives me chills. Or, you know, one of mine is like they made a movie out of it. Like, you know, and it's just every time I watch it or I watch a documentary on it, I just wish I was there, man. You know, and another, I might have a couple of criteria. I just thought about it. You know, another one is like how important the event was. You know what I mean? Like not only in sports, but maybe like, you know, like in history, like just plain history, you know, and that was a big part of my list too. It's just like, man, like you had to be there for that, you know what I mean? For that event, that game, that whatever, you know, so those were probably my three where I was kind of, when I was thinking through this, cause there's obviously so many we can sit here and talk about, we can be here 10 hours, but you know, to narrow it down to five, couple honorable mentions, but yeah, that was my criteria. What about you, Jeremy?
Definitely with like, no, I didn't want it to just be like, oh, a team I liked. So whether it be a local team or a team I just rooting for, they won. Like that didn't count for me. Like I didn't want that on there. Right. For me, it was the debate was sometimes. A big thing is a big cultural event, but the actual event wasn't maybe the greatest game or greatest, whatever the case may be, but it was just like this event was great compared to like, oh, a great game. And I think for me, I went with more of, if you could have a combination, that was great, but I wanted a moment that shook the culture. I love, as a lover of history in general, I love talking about the where were you when this happened kind of moment, and moments that sports has them, history has it, like, you know, where you were when, like, you know where you were when this happened. You know, we've done episodes, check our archives on OJ Simpson, you know, that Bronco car chase, people know what they were doing June 17th, 1994 when that happened. You know, I watched a docuseries recently on the Challenger explosion. People know where they were when that happened and what they were doing and all those things. So it doesn't have to be always be tragic, but just those moments that you just can like, they shook up the culture and it was like, whoa, this is a big moment. And I love those times when you can, even in the present, you feel, you know, this was a big moment. And it, as time goes on, you can kind of have the words on it and say, well, this affected this, you know, kind of like what we do on our podcast. But moments where you just know, like, we're going to be talking about this as a society, as a group of fans for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you said it a lot better than I did, Jeremy, and I appreciate you saying it like that. That's kind of what I meant with, like, when I was talking about, like just important moments in history, you know, like, it's more of, like, the event sometimes rather than the game. Rather, some of these events are just a regular season game, you know, and nothing incredible happened. It's just that one thing that happened that day. It's you know, change history forever, maybe, you know, yeah. Especially sports history. So, yeah, so that's, I'm with you, man. So I was excited doing this. And again, like, just trying to think back, and it was so many like games that I was like, oh man, like that would have been so cool to go to that. Or, you know, I'm thinking like just moments like Earl Campbell's run, right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we've run and dudes and do rip this. I would have loved to have been there and to see that. Or, you know, Bo Jackson's run in Seattle. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's stuff like that. It would have just been super cool to see. But yeah, I wasn't surprised with my list, but we'll see. We'll see. And I have a question, though, before we get started. Are you surprised with anything, you know, with your list? And it's just like, oh, man, like, I'm surprised that this is not here. Or, like, this sport is not here. Because I have one of those for my list.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm saying too much. I guess there's not a lot of pro football for me.
Same.
Not a lot of like NFL like kind of moments. And that, it, you know, I think if like an honorable mention, I have one, but okay. Things that I'm like I have to be there for, and honestly. You know, not to just keep plugging our archives, but I'm always glad to do that.
Right, right.
You know, I think the NFL, to their credit, NFL Films,
yes,
has documented so much that, yeah, you could be like, I definitely could be like, oh, that'd be great to go. If people had a bunch, I wouldn't knock it probably. But it's like, they did such a great job. I don't have that feeling. I'm just like, oh, yeah, because like we talked when Paul Camerata from NFL Films was on. I feel like I was there, or like I remember when I saw that clip of the immaculate reception, blah, blah, and like I've seen it from so many angles. I don't, or the catch. I'm kind of like, I'm good. Like, you know, I don't know why. Maybe that's, I could always change a little bit, but like none of those were like I had to be there for it.
Right. I agree, Jeremy. And it's like, you know, I don't have on my list. I don't have any football. I don't have any NFL. One thing I'm really surprised with is I don't have any college sports on my list. That's my one huge surprise. That it's like, wow, like I don't have any college football, any college basketball. I was really close to a couple, but I just felt like some of these other ones trumped it. And there was one sport on mine that showed up a couple times. And I'm not surprised by that. But, again, I am surprised there was no football on mine, like NFL stuff. But I agree with your point. I think a lot of the stuff I've seen, you know, and I can just look back some of this other stuff. I can still see it, but it's not as accessible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it is like some football stuff. So.
Absolutely. So let's get into it, man. What's your number five?
So I'll say this, to rank them, they're like all ones to me. You know what I mean? Like maybe my top two are like one and two for sure. You know what I'm saying? Like, but these are like 2A, 2B, 2C. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of how I feel about it. I was iffy when it came to number five, because one of my honorable mentions is like a big time event, and it's like a sport I've had fallen in love with. You know, as I've gotten older, but my number five, right? I mean, let me just shut up and just get to my number five. My number five, 1998, Delta Center, Salt Lake City, Utah, June 14th, 1998, Game 6, NBA Finals, Bulls versus Jazz. At that moment, we thought, you know, that was it, right? That was the last time we're going to see MJ. You know, playing any ball, you know, winning any championships, whatever the case. We knew going into that, maybe not everyone, but if you were like a diehard, you knew going into that finals, like this was it. You know what I'm saying? Like this Bulls team, next year there wasn't going to be Scottie, Michael, all these guys, Phil Jackson, you know, so you knew you were watching. I knew I was watching. I'll keep it to myself. The end of probably the greatest team I've ever seen, right? I was a huge Jordan fan growing up as a kid. Loved Jordan. There was a million of us who were out there, felt the same way. But for me, it was like this amazing player, all-time great player, greatest player in NBA history, to have this one moment. And it's more than the shot, right? We've talked about this game. We've documented this. Again, check the archives, right? Like, we've talked about this. It's like that last minute, you know what I'm saying? Or like last 48 seconds or whatever it was, what Jordan did there. And again, and then it became even more important for me knowing that how this team was like running on fumes at this point, right? Like it was just so much that went into this team. And again, I don't want to take too much time with each one of mine, but you know, going for that second three-peat was a huge deal for me, you know. And then the way that game just ended, you know what I'm saying? Like, and a part of like these events for me is also like the call of the game, right? And we've talked about like that Bob Costas call, and you know, Michael and the Bulls take the lead, like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's just that picture, one of my favorite like pictures of all time is that, you know, Jordan taking that shot and that ball's going in the air, and you see all these Jazz fans just looking like, you know, like super like stunned, and they know what's coming. You know that shot was going in, you know what I mean? And him just kind of standing there for a second or two, the gooseneck, and then just turning around and walking away. It's just one of those moments in my life where I was like, holy shit, like this is like some incredible like storybook written stuff. So I would have loved to have been there to see him shut all those fans up too, especially in Utah, you know. That's my number 5, 98 Finals, Game 6, Chicago with the lead.
Okay. No, that's good. That is an honorable mention. That's a surprise. I thought it would have been in mine. It's one of the most, I remember where I was watching it. It's a great moment. It's probably like number 6, honestly. Okay. And I agree with what you said. Like, all these are like ones. So it's really hard like to kind of to put it down. But so that one just missed. I'm going to give you so I can't knock it though. You said it really well. Like that's such a, it was the end of so many things.
Right.
My number 5, this one also surprised me, but I got to say it's just as awesome on so many levels for me. I'm going to give you game 6 of the 75 World Series.
Ooh. Okay.
Reds. The Big Red Machine versus the Red Sox. On a personal note, the Big Red Machine is one of the most, like, they're one of the more fascinating teams for me personally in sports history. So anything I can get my, there's certain, like, I love all sports history, but there's certain things that stick out. And as far as a team, the Big Red Machine is very high on my list that I can't get enough of hearing about an individual on that team. Right. Or you give me anything on that team and how they are together, and I love just watching clips of them from that whole run from 70 through 76. That team is just, that's to me the closest thing we'll have to Murderous Row is that Big Red Machine. That game, though, on so many levels, I mean, you have the mystique. I think people, it's maybe arguably the greatest game of the past, you know, 50 years. I think that's it. I think it's iconic in so many ways, because of what the Red Sox, and that team's a colorful team and all the characters they have. But, you know, the Reds are trying to get over the hump. They went, lost in the World Series in 70, lost in 72, got bounced in the LCS in 73. They're getting that whole bridesmaid, never a bride kind of label. The Red Sox, we know they're still fighting the curse of the curse of the Bambino. And the ups and downs that game have. So that's a great game all the way through. The back and forth is phenomenal. From Bernie Carbone, that home run to tie it up, and he hits that big 3-run shot, and you know he's flying around the base, and you know he's told the story, so it's not knocking him. Like, you know, and he's cleaned up his life. He's sober now, but he says he was high as anything that night, and he's hitting that home run, and he's flying around the bases, yelling at Pete Rose, "Don't you wish you were as strong as me? Don't you wish?" And that's such a great, you know, and Pete Rose is saying that's the greatest game he's ever been a part of. And that the Bernie home run is huge because you see him foul off a pitch right earlier, and it looks like he's like a little leaguer. It's like, you don't belong up here. And to crack that three-run shot, I mean, from, you know, George Foster throwing out the runner at the end of, you know, to end the game, and then we all know Carlton Fisk and that classic home run. And I hear this joke a lot even still. You know, people say the 75 World Series, the Red Sox won that series 3-4. Because people feel like Fisk won that game, you know, like, oh, he won that World Series. But no, he forced a game 7. But that game kind of helped bring baseball back. That game led to the World Series being played more in prime time. The World Series pre that was always in the daytime. So when you watch clips of like the 69, like the amazing Mets, those worlds is always daylight, which would be so weird for me. Like, right. I'm like, man, the World Series in like, you know, as a kid, I'm like at school, like, I wonder who's winning game one of the World Series. Like, that's a bizarre thing. But this show, baseball can do well in prime time. And it's just one of those moments that people talk about. It's been glorified in movies, pop culture, everywhere. I honestly, Carlton Fisk was a really good player. I really feel like people don't talk about Carlton Fisk if he doesn't have that home run. I'm going to be honest with you. But I'm not saying he's not a Hall of, he is a Hall of Famer, but that home run magnified Pudge on another level. So for me, this just, and if you watch like our YouTube channel on like the Phillies, you know, 2022, baseball has something magical about it. And that game represents all that is magical with baseball to me. So that's my number 5, game 6 of the 75 World Series.
It's a great game. Great, great game. And you talk about the Big Red Machine. And if, you know, that's one of those teams to me, like, and it might be a future episode, right? You never know. And it's just one of those all-time great teams that, you know, have been forgotten. You know what I mean? Like, you're talking about, like, they had so many great players on this team, right? So Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, Tony Perez, Pete Rose, like, even guys like, you know, Ken Griffey Sr., like, Sparky Anderson was the coach. Like, there's so many, so much talent and all-time great talent, you know what I mean, on that team. And it wasn't like some old guys. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they were a machine. Like, probably one of the best nicknames of all time, right, for a team. Like, they were just a big red machine, and they were just crushing everything. And then you can see how much success they had in the 70s. So, great, great game, right? And it's an all-time great. And what we all remember is that Carlton Fisk, like, flagging, like, trying to push the ball fair. And, you know, what we tend to forget is the team they were playing, right? And that's an amazing, amazing team. So, again, I'm not going to probably argue with any of yours, right? Like, that's a great game, man. Great, great game. So, good stuff. Good stuff. So, all right, I'll go with my number 4, right? And I did watch this live. Like, this, I watched, I was a little kid, you know, but even as a little kid, I don't even think I was 10 years old. I was like 10, you know. Even at that age, I knew what I just saw was maybe the biggest upset of all sports, right, of all time. And even I was watching it with my sister, right, I have two older sisters, and I was watching it with her. And even she, who's not like a huge sport fan, but she likes boxing and stuff like that, but she was like out of her mind, you know what I'm saying? Like, in shock of what just happened. And what I'm talking about is, you know, February 11th, 1990, Tokyo Dome, Tokyo, Japan, Iron Mike Tyson versus Buster Douglas. And again, probably the greatest upset of all time in sports, definitely in boxing history. You know, the odds were famously 42-1, right, in favor of Tyson. And, you know, we all know the story, right? Like, we all know what led up to this event, right? What happened in this event, and then what happened afterwards to these two guys. You know, Tyson walked in that fight. He was 37-0, 33 knockouts, WBA, WBC, IBF, and ring champion. He's a unified heavyweight champion, right? And then you got Buster Douglas coming in this fight, 29-4-1, 19 knockouts. Buster Douglas, huge disappointment, right? The one thing in boxing, there's a few things that you don't want to be called. And it's one is like lazy. And then two is like almost like a quitter, you know, and not a hard worker, right? And he was kind of labeled all of that stuff during his career. And But coming into this fight, he won like his last six or something like that. And, you know, that's how he got the shot to Tyson. This was supposed to be a warm up to Holyfield and Tyson, which is a fight that everybody wanted to see. And, you know, again, we know the story, right? Like Tyson was going through all the stuff, changed trainers, going through issues with management, obviously going through issues with his wife, right? Like it was all public and, you know, he was crashing, you know, he was crashing, burning at the time. We just didn't know. And, you know, probably one of the best heavyweights of all time. In that era, you know, I listened to, like, you know, my brother-in-law's talk about Tyson. My brother-in-law's like around 50 years old, something like that. And that's their era, right? Like, that's their guy. And, you know, to hear them talk about it. And obviously, we all seen the knockouts and everything. But to hear them, the way they just talked about him, it's just, it's always amazes me, man. Like, what Mike Tyson did in his career for, and for boxing. And in an era where it was like, it was a lot of shit going on in life in general, right, in the world. And you had this one guy, this iconic boxer who was just destroying everybody and was like the epitome of toughness. And, you know, then you got this other guy coming in here, you know, and Buster Douglas, who, again, you know, won a couple fights in a row, you know, was getting a little better. But, you know, 23 days before the fight, you know, his mother passes away. That kind of like gives him a different type of push there. And he's like in the best shape of his life. And all this talent that he had in there just kind of came to in this fight here. And, you know, and then the opposite with Mike Tyson, he doesn't train at all. You know, I think it was Bobby Brown's autobiography. He talked about they went out the night before. You know, like they were out the night before. Tyson didn't even want to go home. He was just like, no, I can beat this dude with 2 weeks not sleeping. You know what I mean? And he got his ass whooped, you know. And the thing is, like, if you haven't watched the fight, obviously, please watch the fight. But Buster Douglas dominated this fight, like, throughout. You know what I mean? Like, early on, you know, you can see he was not one of these guys who was just, he was, like, petrified of Mike Tyson. You know, he was hitting him with the jab. He pretty much set up the blueprint on how to beat Mike Tyson, right? Like, if you were a bigger guy, he was, like, 6'3 or something like that.
Yeah.
He was keeping him away with the jab, coming with the right hand, and every time Mike Tyson came in on him to do some damage, he just grabbed him, you know? And, yeah, I think it was the 8th round, Tyson knocked him down. It kind of seemed like he won that fight, you know? That count was very suspicious, but, you know, Buster Douglas got up, and again, like, everybody always labeled him like a quitter and all this stuff, and he got up, man, and he continued to ass whooping, and in the 10th round, he knocks Mike Tyson out. You know, great call, you know, and to end the fight. And again, biggest upset in boxing history for sure, but one of the biggest upsets in sports history. And I would have loved to have been there to watch that, man. Even probably gamble some money on that, you know.
Yeah.
On odds. But for my number four, Tyson versus Douglas.
That's a great choice because it's definitely my favorite fight of all time. Probably, honestly, Jose, this list, we did it 10 or 20 years ago. This is in my top five for sure. I think now, like with perspective, I think it is the greatest upset in sports history. I think what's interesting about that is that just how it is in Japan, it's not a big noise. Like, when they're watching an event, the culture is to show respect. So, like, they don't make a lot of noise. So it's very quiet.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, that's in Vegas or at the Garden. It'd be totally different. Watch, like, the crowd would be going crazy when Buster is winning those rounds. But if you watch that fight, and I always love the Colonel Bob Sheridan when he's calling it, there is like Jim Lampley doing it. And I love Jim Lampley, but that's actually not the call. I don't like Jim Lampley's call. I love Colonel Bob Sheridan going nuts.
He was going nuts, yeah.
And he's going nuts throughout the entire fight. Like, just say, and Buster is really just, you know, Buster's hitting him with the jab, and I don't know what's going on with Mike. Like, he's just like, kind of like, it was just, it's so that he adds to that. But it's just so, I kind of wonder, though, how I would be. It's one of those things, and I'm just going to compare it to where, like, the Eagles winning the Super Bowl, right? Or like anyone's team winning the Super Bowl. And, you know, the Super Bowl is at a destination. And sometimes it's like, I've heard other fan bases say this too. Do you want to watch the game at home and be with like your city and like your family and friends when they finally win it? Or do you want to go to wherever the Super Bowl is and you're there, but you're not, it's a foreign city. You're not with like a bunch, like you're with a lot of like people you don't know. And that's kind of where I'm at with that, which is I feel like I would be like, are you guys seeing this shit? But like everyone be quiet, you know what I mean? And it'd be like, this is crazy. Buster Douglas is winning. And then when he wins the fight, I'd be going crazy. But it's like it was quiet, and that's what it's always the stark contrast. And usually other great fights, it's loud because that's how an American audience is. But over there, it's very different. So, but it's a great choice. It's my favorite fight, and I do think it's the greatest upset in pro sports history, at least, like, is Tyson Douglas. So I can't knock it, man.
Yeah, and I'm forever grateful to my sister for allowing me to watch that with her. And again, I was a child, man. And it even then, it was like, I knew I saw something special, you know what I'm saying? And then the crazy part is we all went over what happened after with Buster Douglas and with Mike Tyson, and it just shifted the heavyweight division big time, you know what I mean? It shifted boxing, and not only with that loss, but just, you know, it shifted sports as well. So
absolutely,
that's my number four.
That's a great pick, and you're right, it shifted the sport, but it shifted all of sports, and that's what you want in these kind of moments where, like, everything changes from this one thing. And that's what leads to my number four, which is something that I think about as, honestly, the past couple of years, the older I get, I think about this event more than when I actually watched it live. And I remember watching it live. And it's a sport, I'll be honest, I don't really like. I'm not a fan of. But that's what makes this event and this person that much more impressive to me. And I got to go back. I'm almost sad we didn't do an episode because this would have been 25 years this year. But the Tiger Woods at the 97 Masters is one of the more incredible things I've ever seen. And one of those, I was a young kid, and it's a sport, golf, I didn't like it. It was boring. It was all that. When it was on TV, turn it. This man comes on, and he's 21 years old. And for all the reasons, like, you just don't associate with it. But you see this guy, he's young. He is, whether that we interview him is kind of like, ugh, like, you don't get it. But when you just watch him, there's charisma doesn't have to be verbal, because you can't take your eyes off of this guy. And he's this young guy, and not just because he looks different, golf's a white sport, and you see the color of his skin, but you're watching him. And you couldn't help but, even the media at the time, and it's not the media we have today, but the media is talking about the racial aspect. Going to the Masters, Augusta, Georgia, how racist that is, you know, and people making these comments, making comments throughout it. Other golfers making racist comments, trying to think they're funny and saying, oh, I guess if he wins, they're going to serve fried chicken and greens. That, I heard all that. Everybody heard all that. So for him to come out, and he doesn't start off playing well. That first day was iffy, but then for the rest of that week, for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to dominate, and to this day win the Masters by the biggest, you know, lead ever, by the biggest, like, difference, like, to this day, 25 years later, no one has dominated the Masters the way Tiger did in 97. And there's something about the Masters that is different. You know, I think all these sports, like, have it, like, you know, I'll be real, like, it's not my favorite, but I know, like, tennis and Wimbledon does feel different. Now, I love watching the U.S. Open more, but Wimbledon has, like, oh, this is a bigger deal. The other big championships in golf are big deals, but the Masters is the Masters. And Jim Nance, you know, nails it. And, you know, Amen Corner and that music. Doom, 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 doom. The Masters on CBS. And it's like, I don't like this sport, but I got to watch the Masters. And
you see all the green and stuff. It's like,
beautiful. It just looks beautiful. And it's just like, man, and you know, that's the hot ticket every year. People want to go to Augusta, Georgia for the Masters. And so to see Tiger dominate, to see his parents there, you saw the significance. His father is black, his mother's Asian. So, you know, people of color there seeing their son and the dream come true. And there's something about the Masters when you know that person's going to win, and the buildup, and it's just a different, I almost don't know how to explain it. Like, because it's like, it's not over, but it is over. And then that sets up more of, like, just a dramatic call and like letting the audience know how historic this win is. And that's what you got with 97. And it was something that changed me. It changed the culture, because for your number five, you mentioned Michael Jordan. And I'll be honest, I still think he's number one. But at that point, no one's rivaling Michael. For a long stretch, Tiger rivaled Michael as far as the athlete in all sports. And it started here. And that was something to see. You know, you were born but very young when Michael took off. I was not born yet. So when we're kind of cognizant, Michael's already Michael.
Yeah.
But to see an athlete on that level who changed the sport, changed the culture forever, to see it rise up. And, hey, I started playing golf because I watched Tiger. I wasn't good, but he made me start playing it. I had to watch an event all the time. I didn't like golf. I like Tiger. Tiger's out, and that's how I feel to this day. Tiger Woods is gone. I don't care anymore. If Tiger's back, I got to see what he's doing. And I think besides Mike Tyson, I don't know there's another athlete who, when we see them just blow out the field or dominate an opponent, we're still glued and hooked. You know, to me, I think of Tiger, I think of Mike Tyson. You knew Tyson was going to knock someone out in the first round. You had to watch that knockout, even though it's like it's a pay-per-view that like it's kind of a waste. Like, it's not going to last long. You had to watch it. You knew Tiger was like, it wasn't, is he going to win? But how much will he dominate? How much will he excite you? Yet you still had to watch it. And it all started there in 97. And what kind of event that was and how that shifted culture, how that shifted race and so many other things. It's just that huge of an event. So my number four is Tiger Woods winning the 97 Masters.
Yeah, it's a great one. You know, it's one of my honorable mentions. Just because of everything you just talked about, right? Like, you know, you see Tiger in the red Nike shirt, and it's just like you can relate to that. You know what I'm saying? I could never relate to golf. And Tiger had people in the hood playing golf, right? Like, they, you know, they were finding courses around, and they were trying to check it out. And, you know, it's just – it was a shift, right, in the culture. And it was a shift in a sport where predominantly is obviously it's white, but – there was never that shift like that. You know what I mean? And they were not prepared for it, you know, and you know, I wasn't prepared for it for sure. You know what I mean? But again, I agree with you. When Tiger was on, I was watching golf and I try to understand it. I don't understand it as much still, but, you know, even when he plays, I mean, he's not going to play anymore, but even like as of like last year or 2 years ago, like when he tried to come back and I was like, well, Tiger's on, I'm going to watch Tiger. You know, it's like, you know, in baseball, when you see that, like, home run hitter, and it's like you're changing the channel. You're like, oh no, I'm going to watch. Let me just watch his at bat. I remember Ryan Howard used to do that to me all the time. Like, I was like, I got to watch Ryan Howard hit. You know, it's just there's certain guys. Barry Bonds, I obviously did that, and it's just when you saw Tiger on TV, it was must watch.
Can I just want to say one quick thing here.
Go ahead, man.
And it was one that it's not even I debated putting on the honorable mentions, but it's a Tiger thing, and it honestly connects you and I. Is that we were together when 2019 Masters, when Tiger, we were working, when Tiger won that event. And how special was that? And how emotional and dramatic was that? And that's when you knew, like, this guy was special. For all he'd been through, the image had been tarnished, all those things. For everybody and all the people we were with that day who didn't give a damn, but gave a damn when they found out, and that stopped. And we, you know, what we were doing, what our job was, it was hard to get people to like focus on one thing. Everybody cared. Everyone was into it. Everyone was pumped that Tiger was winning the 2019 Masters. And so what is that? 97 is a quick math, but 22 years later to still have that effect is unbelievable. Like, you know what I mean? Like, who in that, like, where everything stopped when he won that Masters. And that was nowhere near magnified to what he did in 97, where right. That's the world stopped. And every, you knew this was a change in everything when he won it. So I just think about that because, like, that's why I put it on there, because I'm like, wow, for his, which sadly could be the last major he wins.
Yeah.
We were together for that one. And we, I remember you, we all had that same, like, and nobody there was a golf fan.
Yeah.
Like, we have like a bunch of people together. None of them are golf fans, including myself, but we all were Tiger fans.
Right. Right. And that's a great one, man. And again, it was one of my honorable mentions, but I'm glad it's in one of our top fives for sure. But it's a perfect segue for me and my number three. And again, like, you know, I was kind of teasing it a little bit, you know, at the beginning of the show. And it's like, you know, this is a regular season game, right? Like, this is nothing. Well, it's obviously something special, but in the game, nothing really special happened. You know, it's just, again, opening is opening day, right? It's just a one out of one, whatever it was back then, you know, 140, I think it was, or 150, something like that in baseball. But, you know, I'm going to take you to Brooklyn, man. You know what I'm saying? April 15th, 1947, you know, I'm going to Ebbets Field here. And, you know, I would have had to have been at Jackie Robinson's first game. You know what I mean? Like that for me was, that would have been, if I had the DeLorean, right, like ready to go, that'll probably be my number one destination when it comes to sports. And obviously we all know why, right? Like it's, we talk about culture change, like that was like a historical like shift in American history, you know what I mean? And for me to have been able to be there, like it's just amazing. And if you think about it, like, you know, the first, and this is like obviously always up for debate because, you know, people don't really, there's different first baseball games, you know what I mean? Like for some reason. And but I was digging a little bit, man, to kind of like try to figure that out. And what I came up with was the first baseball game was May 4th, 1871. It was like the Cleveland Four Cities versus the Fort Wayne Kikiungas.
Oh.
Yeah.
Say that fast three times.
Right. I had to look up how to say that, man, which was, you know, a little tidbit, which was the home of Chief Little Turtle's Miami's Indian Settlement territory.
Wow. Look right. At you, Jose, with the fun facts.
I'm digging. I was digging, man. And
for everyone who doesn't know, Jose loves his Diet Snapple, and like he should be working for them for these fun facts here. That's pretty good.
Hell yeah, Diet Snapple. If you want to sponsor this show, please do. but that's officially, I think, the first MLB game. Right? You're talking 76 years later is when Jackie Robinson is his first game is played and baseball is integrated and. You know, everything kind of changed there. And, you know, again, American history changed and we all know what Jackie went through. And, you know, another thing that, not that it surprised me, but he was 28 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like, so to me, like, that goes to show, you know, it's back then, people of color did not get an opportunity. Like, yeah, he was in his prime, but the things that he could have done when he was 24 or 25 years old playing in the major leagues, like a lot of people, other people got the opportunity to do. He did not. He came in at 28. He did what he did. You know, he wins rookie of the year in 47. 2 years later, he wins MVP, you know, for Brooklyn. It's just obviously it's probably the most important date in sports history, in my opinion, you know, like him integrating baseball and that ability of other sports to follow suit. And so for me, that's 100%, I would have to been there to watch that. So that's my number three.
You know, I can't, like you say, it's not an argument, because it's a great choice. I think I look at that event now a little bit differently because I think there's so many things. You know what I thought about, and I was going to put it on my list, but I didn't, was when Jackie stole home.
Yeah.
When the World Series against, you know, Yogi Bear. But the thing is, in Negro Leagues, Jackie done that before, but not only Jackie, so many other great players have done that. And I think that's what makes me look back on it, like definitely will always tip my hat to it. But there were so many other players, as far as just baseball, who were greater, who should have been there.
Right, right.
And also what it did, and to me, it's like, you know what, I want to go back now. I want to go to a Negro League game because I'm like, this is where the real ball's at. Like, y'all missing out. This is where the real great players are. And it's it just really kind of just hits me in a lot of ways where I'm glad, you know, let's be real, he was chosen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a lot of the thing, a lot of the reasons why we saw a lot of athletes, like they might, you know, people, you know, singers, actors, they have talent, but there's a look and there's an image. And that's what Jackie had. And he was the right guy was picked because he did a lot of things and a lot of things that people try to, you know, walk over and not talk about. Jackie stood firm on, you know, he's definitely the most important athlete, but I think hearing you talk about him being 28 when he played, he gets overlooked as one of the greatest athletes just because, you know, a three sport star at UCLA.
Yeah.
Like, and without, you know, he could have done so many things. Many people say football was the best sport for him. But that was still just barely getting integrated at that time too. So, maybe arguably our, you know, to me, definitely the most important athlete, arguably maybe the greatest athlete in America in the 20th century. You can't knock it. I just, it's one of those ones that just like Tyson Douglas, 10, 20 years ago, it's on there. I just look at it differently now where it's a great moment. It's a great event, but I just kind of frown in a way. I know it should be, oh, it broke it, but I go,
yeah,
there's so many other guys, yeah, who could have done it, but I can't knock it. It's a great choice, and it's yeah, not only one of the most important days, like you said it so well, in sports history, one of the most important days in American history, honestly, is that day for a lot of reasons. So, yeah, it's not there's no bad choices we're going to have here, people.
No, absolutely not. And again, like that was more of like a preference of mine, you know. Mm-hmm. Definitely could have picked a whole bunch of other baseball games, but you know, just what that day meant to not only like the African-American community, but the Hispanic community as well, you know, and allowing us to come in and play baseball. And, you know, yeah. I could have went to like Roberto Clemente and all that stuff, but it started April 15th, 1947, for sure. That's my number three. What you got?
My number three is something that we, in a way, reference a lot on this show indirectly. And I honestly, I'm going to be real with you, real with the people listening. I try to get away from it because I feel like it's easy. And I feel like it's all these other things. But I go, it is still probably the most impressive thing of one of the more impressive careers in sports history. One of the great tall tale, one of the great mythical careers in sports history. And I got to go back to March 2nd, 1962. In Hershey, PA, and seeing Wilt Chamberlain score 100 points. And if I could have been there to see him get 100, it is the event that I wish we had cameras for. I wish there was the footage to just see that. Last year, we did an episode, I guess it was early 2021, an episode about Kobe. You know, 1 year after his passing, and we looked at Kobe's 81-point game. And that's Kobe. Kobe's a shooting guard, had the ball in his hands, bringing it up, and it's impressive. But he's jacking up a lot. But to see Wilt was 7-1, a center, and, you know, it was you had to get the ball to Wilt.
Yeah.
So then to see, like, these guys are throwing the ball into Wilt and see him just routinely just dominate, and a man who was obsessed with stats and a man whose career is a walking stat book. And there's so many, like, you know, averaging 50 points a game in that 61-52 season. Man. You know, leading the league in assists, never fouling out of a game. But to me, the 100 points is still the number one thing. He scored 100 in a game. And I know you see, you know, Cheryl Miller did it in a game. And, you know, people, high school people. DeJuan Wagner did it in a high school game. Not taking anything away from it. But in pro basketball, 100 points. And it's one of those ones that's easy to point to that it's like, will it ever be done? And Kobe got 81. I was for sure no. Kobe's 81 makes me think, maybe. Like, I had a bet I would say no, but like, I'm not as confident as I was like 20 years ago, 25. Like, that'll never happen. I just think it's just one of the awesome feats in sports history. One of the great mysteries. There's so many stories around it, so many stories behind it of just like what it was it like and what it was like to be there. And it's one of those things that it's rock sports, but that arena in Hershey, there wasn't that many people there. Right. So very few people saw this monumental thing that, you know what, this past March is still 60 years later, the anniversary, people are talking about it. So I would have loved to have seen one of the great athletes. He's up there, too.
Yeah.
You know, as one of the great athletes of the 20th century. And to see him at his peak and to see him, a guy who's done so many unbelievable and unreal. And did you see that kind of things? To see the number one thing that he did, I would have loved to have been there to see that. So my number three, Will Chamberlain's 100-point game.
Yeah, that almost made my list too. I don't know what to add to that, right? Like, it's just to watch someone dominate like that, you know. And what frustrates me a lot is, like, you know, we've talked about it in previous shows where people, you know, he's playing plumbers, like it's 100 points, you know what I'm saying? Like, so what's the difference with somebody doing it in high school with people like that probably shouldn't even be on the court? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this is a professional sport and professional athletes. And did he have an advantage over most of these guys? Yeah, he was a big dude and a super freak athlete. But for him to score 100 points and like you said, like, what makes it even like a bigger event for me is, like, there's no footage. Like, you know, we talked about, you know, NFL Films when we talked about it, you know, with our, you know, when we did our episode there as well. It's like, man, if the NBA would have been like NFL Films and had some footage of that, maybe I don't feel the way I feel about it, but because of that, like, it's just, you know, I've seen, like, the box score, stuff like that. Like, it's just looking at those numbers, it's like some amazing stuff. It's like video game stuff. And even in video games, it's hard to do, you know. And for him to do it in a professional game, it's an all-time moment, especially in basketball history.
As a guy who made his free throws that night as a historically bad free throw shooter, and also – like you said, there was really good players on the Knicks teams, and they started purposely trying to prevent and also hold possessions. You know, remember, no 24-second clock. So all these things, you know, people could hold the ball on you. The Knicks were trying. They did not want to give up 100. It's just something that is awesome. I think it probably will stand as the most unbelievable thing that the game of basketball has ever seen, and it's up there for one of the most unbelievable things in sports history. So
people know what that is. Like, yeah, you know, he talks about, when you talk about Wilt, 100, any generation, you know, the picture of him holding up the little sign with the 100,
right?
It's an iconic, obviously it's an iconic game, but even that picture is like an iconic picture, and that just goes to show you, like, how impressive that was. So it's a good one, man. It's a really good one for number three. So I guess I'm up with my number two. So if you've if you're a fan of the show, you've listened to our show. We did a podcast on this event. So check the archives again. We're going to keep saying that. And this event, because of so much that was going on in the time politically and all that stuff, just kind of elevated this event to where it's at in history as well, sports history, American history as well. And this is the fight of the century. Like, people, you know, you hear fight of the century almost every year now at this point, or at least every 5 years. This is the fight of the century. And what I'm talking about is, you know, we're going back March 8th, 1971, you know, the great Muhammad Ali versus the great Joe Frazier in Madison Square Garden. Jeremy, this is what I want you to picture, man. Me and you going to this fight. You got your fur coat on. I got my fur coat on, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got some ladies with us, man. We're hanging out. Like, this was the first event that I, looking back and, like, going through everything, was like, it was like the modern day how it is today, right? Like, it was the event where, you know, obviously it's in Madison Square Garden. So what it does for Madison, it elevates Madison Square Garden as, like, an arena and as a place to have an event. It's the first event that I can remember hearing about or reading about or, you know, watching documentaries. Like, it's like the first place that you had to be there. You know what I'm saying? If you were a celebrity, if you had any status in movie, sports, whatever, you had to be at this event. Like, it is now, right? Like, if it's a big fight, you see all types of celebrities everywhere. You know, you look at the 80s with Lakers and all that, there were celebrities everywhere. Like, you had to be there. This was, to me, like, one of the first events that people had to be there. There was so many people. Sinatra was there. Like, it was, you name them, they were there, right? And again, we all know what happened here, right? We got, you know, Joe Frazier coming in 26-0, 23 KOs, WBA, WBC, ring champion, you know, champion. Ali coming off a 3.5-year layoff, had a couple fights before this fight, 31-0, 25 KOs. I was surprised by how many KOs he had.
Yeah.
You know, former undisputed champion. Ringside seat was $150. Jeremy, so we could afford that today, you know. But
yeah,
it's like the equivalent of like $1,100 or so right now. And, you know, it's just, you know, 67, Ali, you know, refuses to go to Vietnam and he's stripped of all his belts and, you know, he can't fight and all that stuff. And Joe Frazier wins these couple tournaments, wins the belts. And but it was like the divide right between these fans. And it was like, you know, you had Ali fans who, and rightfully so, were upset. Like, they didn't really look at Joe Frazier as a champion, right? Nobody beat Ali. He was the champion still, you know. And then you had, and then you also had, like, anti-war protesters and, you know, the hippie movement and all that, like, going for guys like Ali, like, the free-spirited people, man. Like, they were all for Ali. Then you had, like, your, you know, your blue-collar, like, go to work every day, you know, like work at the warehouse, the steel mill, whatever, you know, very old school, like patriotic fan base who was all about Joe Frazier and, you know, everything that he was doing because they hated Ali that much, right? And, you know, you had those two, like, classes and going against each other politically, all that stuff that was going on with the war and everything, man. It was just like a melting pot of like so much going on in the world, right? Like not just in sports. So, you know, it was just an event that I would have had to have been at. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, if I could jump into the DeLorean, me and you are going, we're getting fur coats there, me, man, and we're going to hang out with, you know, Frank Lucas and all them dudes. Like, we're going to be there, man. And this was not my number two. Like, this is an all-time event.
Well, this is my number one.
Okay.
And this is my number one because for a lot of reasons, I think it's the start of not in the team, but for individual, the great individual rivalry of the 20th century, Ali and Frazier. When you think of rivals, that's where you go to. Before Bird and Magic, before, you know, before Brady, man, whatever you want to say, it's Ali Frazier. It's the number one rivalry. And this started it. And, you know, I've been to the Garden. I've gotten off at Penn Station and the Garden. It was the world's most famous. It was called that before 71. Yeah. You know, Willis Reed coming onto the court happened a year earlier. So, like, big moments have happened at the Garden all the time, for sure. But when I got my get off at Penn Station, I still do it now. But my first time I get off, I walk up Madison Square Garden. I think, whoa, this is where Ali Frazier 1 happened.
Yep.
And then I see a big poster, and I had that picture. I took a picture of it because they had a big poster, March 8th, 71, Ali Frazier. And they had Ali in those, I remember, I can picture those red trunks, yep. Frazier in those green, and they're out, and it was the event. You know, Frank Sinatra said, you know, he wanted to go so bad, he'll take pictures for Life magazine just so he can be in there. So many celebrities were there. It is an event. Now, I think people who don't know, the Super Bowl has that effect.
Yeah.
In today's game where everything stops, everything is the. But I don't think anyone can picture a non-Super Bowl event in sports having that effect where, you know, Nelson Mandela said that he was imprisoned in South Africa. But when this fight happened, they let all the prisoners gather around and listen to this fight. Everybody, the world literally stopped for a boxing match. And you can't think outside of the Super Bowl. And honestly, I don't know if the world stops for the
Super Bowl. Not for the
Super America stops for the Super Bowl. The world doesn't. And I don't know if we'll have events like that where the whole world stops all over countries. People still say that was probably the most watched sporting event. If you look at like everywhere, everything stopped. And there's so many people I can talk to who has a story about trying to get there, or they say they were there, wink, wink,
right,
yeah. Or they, you know, they, oh, this happened, and that's why I couldn't go, and this is who I was rooting for. You nailed it perfectly, all the divides that was going on and why this fight is not the greatest fight ever. It may not even be, in people's opinion, the greatest fight of that the three that those two guys had. They had three great fights. It may not be number one as the greatest fight. It's the most important fight of the three of them had.
Yep.
And it's one of the more important fights in boxing, and it's the biggest event, in my opinion, in sports history. So if I could go back in time, I would want to go to Ali Frazier won the fight because the world stopped. And I don't think people get it. Like, only tragedies I can think of. You know what I mean? Like bad, like, you know, 9/11, the world, I could feel the world stopped. Like, you know, when JFK was assassinated, yeah. When the pandemic hit the world, I feel like when George Floyd happened, the world like stopped. A fight, not a basketball game, not a football game, a fight made the world stop. So that's my number one. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was
Ali Frazier one.
It was close to my number one. Obviously, right, number two. But again, like when I was talking about my 3, 4, and 5 could have been like 2A, B, and C. Number two, like they're 1 and 2, like are mine 1 and 2. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's mm-hmm. no, like there was nothing passing this. And so I'm curious to know what your number two is.
My number two is probably your number one. I would be shocked, like fall out of my chair if we're not the same.
Yeah.
But it's my number two is the Miracle on Ice.
You know that's my number one, man. Yeah. You know how to go there.
And honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. I did not want to put it on there.
Okay. Talk to us.
Because it is something that got talked about so much. You always hear about it. Like I feel like as time of the year, which is sad in a way, I don't hear it as much. But in the 90s and the 2000s, that was talked about every year, every February, like that. That didn't need, like, you know, anniversaries, even on our show. It's like the 20th, 25th. That didn't need a 0 or a 5. It'd be like the 17th of, you know, it's like they got the 23rd. It's like 23rd anniversary, Miracle on Ice. Like, Mike Ruzioni, like, I hear about him so much, and I'm like, man, this dude hit one shot. One goal.
He was a scrum,
and,
yeah.
He wasn't that good. He was a captain, but like I hear about him so much. But that's why I have to give it to him, because I hear about it so much. And I think on a real note, let's be real, right? All these have a political, not all of them, but a lot of them have a political nature to them.
Right. That's what elevates them so much.
Mm-hmm. What bothers me, though, is what have we heard throughout time too, but elevated more. Sports and politics don't mix. Sports and politics.
Yeah.
And that's why I had to check myself, because I've had to use this game, Miracle on Ice, as a counterpoint to people saying, so then why was that so important? Just because one hockey team beat another? Was it just that? Like, was it just an upset? Like, oh, the Russians were a better team. That's why we care so much. No, you care because of Cold War.
Yeah.
And what's that? That's not political? So then we should keep it out of it. Oh, no, we should just be like, we should have gave a golf clap and just said, hey, one hockey team beat another team.
Yeah.
Why do you care? Why do people talk about it 42 years later and care so much? And they were crying. And, hey, this helped. The country was down. And, you know, the Iran hostage situation. And, you know, gas prices were up. And America's self-esteem was feeling low. This helped change that. Why is all that involved then if sports and politics don't mix? This should be about a hockey game. And, you know, let's be real. If you watch that hockey game, it still does not make any sense how America won that game. I mean, the time of possession between the Soviet Union and America is crazy in the Soviet Union. I mean, Jim Craig was playing out of his mind, because there's no way. Like, when you watch it, you're still kind of like, how do they win this game? But that's all we should talk about, right, Jose? It's just a hockey game. So I had to check myself, because that's what's bothered me, is when it's convenient, then you want to bring that in. When it makes you uncomfortable, you don't. But I had to check myself and go, you know what? Whether it was Miracle, the Disney movie, whether I've seen a bunch of documentaries, I have read books on it, I have to be honest, and I don't really say it to you even, when I see a podcast pop up, anything with those guys, I will listen. I have read things about Herb Brooks and his coaching techniques and how he motivated them and tried to use them in my life when I'm at in work and stuff. And so I sat there and I go, if I do all that, if I can, which I did even before we knew this topic the other week, I'm getting ready for work and I just like, I got to put on Miracle and watch a few scenes.
Yeah.
If again. I'm doing all again. Yeah. You know, or when Herb Brooks calls out Rob McClanahan, and, you know, says, you know, candy ass, and they're going at it in the locker room. Like, I watch it all the time. And I got to give props to it, because none of these guys wound up being iconic hockey players or iconic Well, Herb Brooks is iconic, but because of this game. But yet I can name so many guys on this 1980 team. Yeah. So that's why I have to put it as number two, even though I kind of was fighting against it, but Miracle on Ice for me.
Yeah, and that's definitely – no, it's my number one. You know what I mean? And, again, everything you just said, right? But, like, you talked about, like, with Wilt's game, you know, it wasn't a lot of people in Hershey watching that game. This is at 8,500 people there. But the atmosphere, because of everything that was going on, right, politically, was so – and this isn't a time – I mean, this is 1980 where tickets are not $500, like – you know, it was in a small city in Lake Placid. Like, you had, like, rabid fans, like, that were able to go to these events and pour, like, their heart out. And then you throw in the, you know, USA, you know, an Olympic, Winter Olympic thing in there. You know, you got the gung-ho, you know, country guys, like, doing that. And it's just, I had to be there. You know what I mean? Like, that's just... the way that crowd was going crazy, man. And again, we talked about Tyson Douglas. This may be number two in the biggest upsets in sports history. And and again, like, we all know what, you know, with the USA team, I have, no lie, Jeremy, I have, like, a fascination with that Russian team from, like, you know, that Soviet team, from, like, 75 and up, you know what I mean? Until, like, until what, 88? You know, when you know, the Soviet Union, like the Red Army stuff, like, all kind of collapsed. I'm, like, fascinated by that team. If – and it was a 30 for 30 of Miracles of Men. It's one of my favorite 30 for 30s. It's you know, because what you're talking about, Jeremy, is, like, we know so much about this USA team. But what we don't know is what happened with this Russian team after this loss. And it was – they were disgraced. And, you know, they went back to their country. And it, like – they were scared, you know what I mean? Because, again, like, you know, they were in the army, but hockey was what Russia was known for. And obviously, Russia had great athletes all over the place, but hockey was their sport, you know? And we all think about, you know, Canadians, and which rightfully so. It's you know, it's a Canadian sport as well, but, you know, the Russians were so dominant. I mean, they played USA in an exhibition in Madison Square Garden, beat them 10-3 that a couple weeks or a couple months prior to the Olympic Games. They have four Hall of Famers on their Russian team, and, you know, and Tretiak. And I think that's why they lost the game, because the coach, I forget the coach's name, but, you know, Tretiak gave up that one goal. It was like a rebound goal. It was like closing to the, like, second period. And he pulled them. He's the best goalie in the world, and he pulls them, you know. And, you know, they have Kolomarov, you know, Sergei Markarov, and obviously, like, you know, Fetisov was a young dude playing on this team, and all Hall of Famers, all hockey Hall of Famers on that team, you know, and they were just, and you said it, they were so dominant, like, but the USA, like, that USA team just got a couple bounces there, and hockey's a sport where your goalie's hot, you got a shot, you know, and Jim Craig kept them in the game, you know, early on in the first couple periods, and then, you know, you got the Ruzioni goal and all that. Like, it was just...
You had magic. You know, Mark Johnson, him, you know, who probably their best player, him getting the goal as well. Like, he was...
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And then you have Al Michaels with one of the greatest calls, you know, of all time in sports history. Like, you know, the miracle call and all that. Like, it's just... It was a great event. You know what I mean? Now, there's other hockey games I wish I would have been at. You know what I mean? I'll get into that with my honorable mention, but... You know, this right here is number one just because of everything we just talked about and just the magnitude of the win for USA, but also the magnitude of the loss for, you know, the Soviet Union.
For sure. And the follow up, yeah, it's in Lake Placid. It's a small arena. It's on tape delay.
Yeah.
Which shows you what people thought, you know, these network and I can't knock them for it. They didn't think, you know, obviously they had an insight into this is going to be, for a lot of people, the defining sport moment of the century. It's a prime time, but imagine you're going like at 5 o'clock on like a Friday, like, all right, let's just go. Maybe they may make it competitive when we get to see a hockey game and you're seeing this amazing moment where then you kind of like, you leave it and you don't, you can't tell people, you know, like people don't know, like no one else besides for a little while, the people in that arena know what you just saw, which is something that is so amazing. And I think it's a great job of you bringing up the Russian team because of how political divided it was. To this day, I do, and you are a bigger hockey fan than I am. I do love like learning about hockey history, but you know the game more. I still feel like people do not give the credit of the innovation of the Soviet Union and how beautiful hockey they played. And that documentary, the 30 for 30 of Miracles and Men, what was fascinating was to see that, that original coach who had
his name's slipping my mind too.
He was a genius. He's so creative. He had different workout regimens for him. He had different, you know, ways of looking at the game. He was a visionary and seeing it like, hey, it's not a, people play it over in Canada and America like a brute game. This is a beautiful game. And one thing that made me, I didn't even realize, when you saw the Soviet Union, whether the army, just anyone, you think Russian, it's like they just are cold. They have no emotion, no feelings. What was cool to see is they all said he showed them love. Yep. He said how you win, how you, this is back in like the 50s and 60s, how you play together, how you have to have a love for another. And no one talks about that. In my opinion, no one talks about the innovation. That's a beautiful style of hockey that they brought that now we are used to seeing in these past few years. But for a long time, we were way behind. Yep. So I'm glad you brought up the counterpoint of also what it did to Russia and what we still don't talk about with Russia.
Right. And it's like, you know, North American hockey was, you know, what you do with the puck. What they created was what you do without the puck. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, all the movement and, you know, they were just passing back and forth. It was just, you're right. It was a beautiful way to play hockey that was adopted by other European countries. And then when it came over to the United States, it was just, you know, it shifted everything from these big 6'5" guys in the 90s putting you through the glass to when you have teams like Detroit Red Wings in 97 win the Stanley Cup against the Flyers and they sweep them and they look like they didn't even belong on the ice with them. So it goes back to this, like, you know what I mean? It goes back to the origins of this Soviet Union team. And, you know, again, these were 4-time gold medal winning teams. You know, they won 5 of the last previous 6, you know, gold medals. They were so dominant, man. Like, even that year they played NHL teams. They were like 6-3 against them. Like, they played the all-star team year before that or a couple years before that. They beat them like 6-3. They were just dominant, you know, and you get so many, like, you talk to, like you see interviews with, like, these players and the way they were in awe of, like, some of these other players that Russian had, it was just, I'm like a fanboy when it comes to that, you know, because, again, you'll see with one of my other ones that I left out, like, my honorable mentions, it'll go back to that as well, so.
Well, that's
number one.
And that was my number two, So, okay. So let's go to your honorable mentions then. What name some out there.
All right. So you talked about, you know, you talked about Tiger, right? I had Tiger on here. I was telling you earlier, I wasn't going to get into this one too much, but any finals, Celtics Lakers in the 80s, I would have loved to have been a part of that.
Yeah, me too.
But these two were very, very close to making my top five. And, you know, this is not in order. I'm just going to read them like where I have them here. It's 1936 Summer Olympics, right? Jesse Owens and what he did there and winning 4 gold medals in Berlin, Germany. And not only because he won 4 gold medals and set world records and all that stuff, but just in the atmosphere where he was in, you know, with, you know, the Nazi regime and how what they were doing in Germany and, you know, Adolf Hitler being in the crowd. Like, just think about that for a minute there. And, you know, and then the thing is, they weren't even going to go. Like, they were trying to boycott it. And, you know, I forget the guy's name. He's like the president of the Olympic whatever.
Avery Brundage.
Yep. He was going to shame them and make it seem like they were un-American. And but if you look at this event, man, like, you know, August 3rd, he wins a 100-meter dash with 10.3 seconds. August 4th, the next day, obviously, wins the long jump. You know, breaking his own world record. August 5th, he wins gold in 200 meter sprint. He beat Jackie Robinson's older brother.
Mac.
Yeah, in that race, and you know, August 9th, he wins another gold medal by the 4 100 like relay. It's a great, you know, obviously it's like we talked about it all the time. He might be the best track and field, you know, runner of all time. And even that, like, I would love to have been there, and also like the best 45 minutes in sports, because he's an Ohio State guy. Like, let's make that clear. And if you're not familiar with like the, you know, the greatest 45 minutes ever in sports, it's happened in Ann Arbor. It's happened in Ann Arbor, right? And a lot of people say it, you know.
So they say.
But this is in Ann Arbor. He breaks three world records, ties another one within a 45 minute span, representing, you know, the great University of Ohio State. So
the awful Ohio State.
I just wanted to add that in there. But that the 36 Summer Olympics was definitely, you know, one of my I would have definitely been there for sure. And then my other one, the 1987 Canada Cup. Right. So that's, you know, these are things that I wish we still had to this day. You know, we used to have the World Cup in the 90s where, you know, you had the Team USA, all these guys, they stopped the NHL season and allow these guys to play, obviously in the Winter Olympics, but some in the summertime they would have like these World Cups, and you know they would allow these people to represent their countries, right, in these World Cups. And that, you know, I talk about like the love I have for hockey, and it was just like, you know, Eric Lindros was a huge part of that. The 94 Rangers were a huge part of that. These World Cups were also a huge part of that because they were around at that same time. And USA had a good team. You know, Canada, Czech Republic, Russia, they all had good teams. Sweden always good with Peter Forsberg at that time. Like, there was so much great hockey that it just transformed me into a hockey fan. But the 87 Canada Cup, Canada had 12 Hall of Famers on that team. You know what I mean? But the most important thing, they had Gretzky and Mario Lemieux in their primes, yeah, right? Their two best players playing on the same line. They were dominating. You know, I think Lemieux had like 11 goals in 9 games. Gretzky had 18 points in 9 games. Had like 16 assists, whatever he had. It was just something just ridiculous, you know. But with all that greatness, you got Soviet Union team coming in, you know, with some really great players as well. And they were, you know, all three games. This is a 3-game series to win the Canada Cup. You know, all three games were 6-5. Game one, you know, Canada was up 4-0. Canada was down 4-0, excuse me, and then came back and lost in overtime. Game two in this Canada Cup is considered like the greatest hockey game of all time. You know what I mean? Like, and it was just, again, it was 6-5. You know, Russia ties it late with the goal by Valery Kaminsky, who was a young player at this time who had an NHL career. You know, I think he scored with like less than a minute ago or close to a minute. And it was just, you know, first overtime was scoreless, and then Gretzky hit Lemieux on a play, and it was just, you know, another overtime goal. And then game three, Lemieux with that all-time great, he scores a game-winning goal. But it was just a beautiful pass by Gretzky, and Lemieux just, you know, glove side, wrist shot. It was just the talent that was in display in this, not only this 3-game series, but in this whole tournament. You know, you had a young Dominik Hasek playing for the Czech Republic. Like, it was just so much talent on this ice. But this 3-game series between Canada and Russia, I would have loved to have been to all 3 games, but especially game number 2, which is considered probably the best hockey game of all time.
No, as someone, I actually do know a lot about 87 and that Canada Cup because of the Gretzky-Lemieux debate and to have them both there. And that's what a lot of people, I'm a Gretzky guy. I respect Lemieux, but I think Gretzky was better. And I like Gretzky. I'm more of a Gretzky fan, I guess. But that, to me, was the impact of that, was like seeing them. You have modern day wise, and you might think I'm wrong, but like the two best players, I feel like, of like the modern times, were like on the same team.
Right. On the same line. You know, like it's
like that. It's incredible to watch, you know. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, even to put it in perspective what Russia was doing, a couple years later, right, they have all this young talent. You got Pavel Bure coming, Alexander McGinley, Sergei Fedorov, all playing on the same line for this Russian, you know, team a couple years down the road. I think like the early 90s they were playing, and that's when they started defecting and he started coming to the NHL, stuff like that. So talent was there, man. It was just some amazing hockey to watch, man. But go ahead, I didn't put you off there.
It's okay. No, your honorable mention's good, besides you mentioned Ohio State. that made me want to throw up. But outside of that, it's tough. It's tough. I'm going to give you three. I'm going to give you the Ice Bowl.
Oh, I thought about that one. That was a good one. Yeah,
that's the Ice Bowl was just something that talk about changing so many things. Talk about, I know Lombardi winds up, but really his last, you know, his last game at Lambeau. It winds up really cementing his Green Bay legacy, and you know, honestly, it hurts. Which, you know, it's crazy to say because the Cowboys still are the Cowboys. Landry still has a great career, Hall of Fame career, but a lot of things are different if the Cowboys win that game. Yeah. And just the factors in that game and the fact that, like, there's technically been colder games in NFL history, but just because that had the, you know, the NFL championship, the right to go Super Bowl II on the line, and the Lombardi-Landry rivalry, Green Bay-Dallas, they had played the year before, and just the mythology that people talk about with that game still, the Ice Bowl sticks out to me for honorable mention. The next two I'm going to shout out because it is weird. I almost don't feel, you know, I don't want to not do it justice. I feel like somebody else, you know, a woman should be on here talking about this to give it its proper perspective, these next two. But I'm going to give the 99 Women's World Cup that final.
Yes.
And for me, I was someone who, when it comes to the World Cup and soccer, always women's soccer always hit me more than men's soccer, to be quite honest, even back then.
It was much better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's been much, much better.
And to this day, even, I will watch that quicker. I didn't know any male soccer players for the America, but I knew who Mia Hamm was well before this. And then she went to North Carolina, and, you know, I knew all that. So that whole run was amazing, but that final – at the role, and like how the U.S. and China back and forth, and it passed. There's the mom test. This passed the mom test and the grandma test, where everyone knew it was coming on, and everyone, no one was like, we watched it. Everyone watched it.
I watched it.
100%. Yeah, and then to go down to like the penalty, the kicks, and just the back and forth, and honestly, you know, Brandi Chastain, and I feel like it's not talked about anymore. For a long time, that shot of her getting the gold and taking off the jersey, and you see the black sports bra, it was imitated, it was controversial. In the end, it wound up being iconic, which is what it should be, but I'll be honest, I know a lot of those players. I would not have known Brandi Chastain without that kick, but I will never forget Brandi Chastain.
Right.
And what that, I wish it would have carried over more for like women's soccer in America. It had a momentum, but it didn't really fully get there. But it made you, you know, I like saying this because I know, and rightfully so, the effect that women's sports have for young women. And that's where we should always, the beginning and the end of that conversation. But a lot of these women's sports have effect on men too.
Yeah.
Where it makes us get into a sport. It makes us kind of believe. It makes us be like, oh, I want to go out there and do that. Seeing this team made me be like, oh, maybe soccer's not that bad. I'm not going to say I'm the biggest soccer fan. I'm not going to lie to the people. But I grew much more respect from it from watching 99 Women's World Cup. I'm going to keep it the next honorable mention I have in the same year, different sport. I go to the 99 U.S. Open in tennis. I have been a fan. I've been following the Williams sisters, their story. They were rising up and seeing them play doubles, and they had braids, and they were athletic. And then, you know, oh, they're from Compton. And I'm like, Compton, that's where Dr. Dre's from. You know, all those things. I was a kid. I was like, oh, okay. And just seeing how, like, I'm looking at Steffi Graf or Lindsay Davenport, and it's like they're really rocking the status quo here. And to see Serena, the younger sister.
Yeah.
Go all the way and win that first, her first, you know, final, her first major that Saturday in Flushing, New York. I remember watching that. That made me, and I liked tennis. I watched tennis. I knew Arthur Ashe. I knew John McEnroe, Martina Navratilova, and Chris. I was a tennis. That's why I put the Tiger moment higher, because I did not like golf then and now. I did like tennis. I wasn't playing tennis. When I saw Serena win, the next day I me and my dad went out, we got tennis rackets, and then we would go to a complex a little bit over and go onto the court. And for about a year or two, we played tennis. I learned how to play tennis. And I, what made me say, not only am I going to watch this, I'm going to do it, was watching Serena Williams win that 99 U.S. Open. And that's the power. We saw just at the, it's funny, at the U.S. Open this year, that was her last, you know, match, and she got a lot of just due, and rightfully so. She's one of the greatest athletes ever. But she inspired me to go out there and do it. And that has, I didn't forget that. And it's just important, because I think a lot of time we talk about women, young girls, they watch a men's sport, but I want to do that. And then we'll see a young woman watching a woman do it, and they're like, oh, that inspires. But it also, we don't talk about how women's sports, women athletes, women in general inspire men too.
Yeah.
And that doesn't get talked about a lot. I think it should, because these two examples, and especially like the Serena, I like tennis. I don't know if I'm getting out there and playing if I don't see someone like me in modern times get out there and win. So those are my honorable mentions that I have.
Yeah, great, great, obviously great choices. Yeah, the ice bowl almost made my honorable mention. I would have went, if I had to pick a football game, I was going to go with Super Bowl X, right? Cowboys, Steelers, and just all the Hall of Fame players that are on that field for both teams, you know, and one of the greatest games of all time, and just great, some great moments in there as well. You talked about, you know, the 99 Women's World Cup. Like, I remember watching that, and I did not watch soccer at all. And they got me to watch, especially specifically women's soccer, but even like men's soccer, you know, years later, you know, like some of those tournaments, World Cups and all that, and Olympics. So, nah, those were great choices, man. And I knew this was going to be fun because, again, like, you know, there's so many, like, amazing sporting events that we could have went to. And, you know, I think we did a good job on this one, though.
Yeah. One last one I forgot. I'm going to give it. So the one college football game I thought about, but I said no, and I think it probably, hopefully, will be a future episode, is 2013 Iron Bowl, the kick six.
Yes, I thought about that one, too.
It's very crazy, but I honestly, very recently, I know Jose loves college football. I love college football, but I'm like, that might be the best game I've ever seen in college football.
Yeah, it's a great, great game. It almost made my list, too.
So I was trying to think, yeah.
And not to, like, jump in on you, but I was trying to think of, like, a college football game. I was like, I got to have a college football game that I would have, you know, obviously I think of, like, you know, USC, Texas Rose Bowl. I thought about Boston College beating Miami, right, in the Orange Bowl.
Oh, those are great. Yeah, that's great.
Right, and I was like, oh, what about the kick six? Like, that place was going bananas. And to be there and be a part of that, that would have been super cool.
Yeah. Even the band, Stanford Cal, 82.
Right.
You know, that is such a wild one, too.
Leighton's shot against Kentucky was another one I thought about. That was a quick drive, too. We didn't have to take the DeLorean. We didn't
go. No, exactly. I have a question for you, because we've mentioned some calls, but if we're there live, we're not getting the call. So right. If we're in Lake Placid, we're not going to hear, not live or like on TV, like even like that was tape delayed, but like getting it, you know, obviously that's been played so much, we would have heard it throughout the rest of our lives, but we're not going to get that feeling. Would that take away a little bit of a moment? Like, how much do you think a great call amplifies it, where it's like, we don't think about it, but you're not going to get that great call if you're there in the moment. You're going to get the event, but not the call. How much does a call amplify a moment, you know, for some of these?
Right. I think for mine, like, definitely, like, you know, that 1980 game, you know, USA Russia, I think that his call amplified that. You know I talked about Bob Costas' call for the 98 finals game six. I think that moment, if I don't hear anything but the crowd screaming, that was good, or not screaming, you know, like that was good enough for me. You know what I mean? Like, and then obviously the Tyson Douglas stuff, like, I don't need to hear commentators. I could just see what's going on. And we talked about how quiet it was in there. And it's just like, I think it was also quiet because people were like in shock. You know what I mean? Like, what was going on? So, no, I think it does elevate it a little bit. Don't get me wrong. But I think in these events, it would have been perfectly fine if we were just in the crowd, you know, just soaking it all in. But some of those calls definitely bump it up a little bit, especially in television.
Okay. Well, I'm good, man. I don't have like I said, I don't think there's anyone. I mean, you never know. People can always find a thing to pick at, but it's hard to say, like, there's no losers. There's no, like, that's a bad one. These are all events that shape pop culture, history, sport history, American history, or world history, depending on what you want to look at. So, I had nothing else, man. I think if people, I would love to hear what people think about this list. If they agree or disagree, or maybe there's ones that we didn't say that, like, it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, that should be higher, like, than what we thought.
Yeah.
Please, you know, hit us up on Twitter at Bigger Game Pod, Instagram at Bigger Game Pod. Let us know. Like, we want to hear, like, what you think of our list. If you think our number ones and twos. Yeah, give us your list as well.
Yeah.
Give us your list as well. So, Jose, this was fun, man. We got to do more lists.
Yeah, we do. We do. We've not fallen off, but we've kind of went away from it a little bit. Not purposely. We just got, there's a lot going on. So we wanted to dive into that. But no, this was fun, and I'm glad we did it for sure.
So for the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Jose Ruiz, I'm Jeremy Dove. Thank you all for listening to Bigger Than the Game. Peace.
Peace.